Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today we have Yakov Filipenko, founder of Inch. Yakov, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be here today.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start with Inch? What problem does it solve in the market?
Sure. So it's a we are like LinkedIn, but we help companies and people to find each other. Specifically for part-time projects. We discovered this area when I was in a venture capital firm, and we have found a new trend on the like workforce market. And based on this trend, we realized that people are looking for new ways of how they can work, how they can find this work, jobs and so on. And and there is a demand, but there is no solution yet. So we are developing such solution.
Got it. And then how did you find out about the problem? Was there a specific instance, or did you just spend a lot of time doing homework and talking to colleagues in your network?
Yeah, it's actually, it started when my first startup was acquired and I joined Altair VC, which is like Israel-based venture capital firm. And it was during the pandemic. Some of our projects didn't feel themselves well, like travel tech startups. But some of them, like Miro or Deal, they started to skyrocket. And even before the pandemic, so their growth was like pretty significant. But pandemic pushed them even further. So we started to investigate what's going on. And we found like an obvious reason. People, professionals, moved to their places or even to their home countries. And after all of the things, they do not want to come like to go back to their offices, because previously the social contract between companies and professionals were like was like work more, earn more, spend more, be more happier. But during this COVID thing, many people realize that if they will not spend their time to commute to their offices, or they will be able to spend more time with their friends and family, or even like travel more, and sure, that what will make them happier. So like for us, it was like something like what happened in 2000s with this dot-com bubble. And we realized that like it's a social demographic changes, and it's going on. Nobody like understands how will it work, but like it's clear like demand, and we need to be a part of it, right? So we start Inch.
Fantastic. And so when you started down this road, how did you decide which types of businesses that you would focus to try to get them on the platform? Was it just like, hey, let me start with any businesses I can get in touch with and convince to get on? Or did you have a specific niche industry or size business that you said, you know what, this is going to be the best fit?
It's actually a great question. To be honest, we started with just my friends and my network. I asked them to start using Inch, and they start onboarding, share some requests, hey, do you know a person who can help us with, I don't know, marketing or something? It was roughly, I don't know, a few hundred people. And with these users, we realized that we are a good fit for like this kind of professionals and this kind of company. So like we pretty soon realized that we are not good fit for big enterprises, because they have a lot of different policies of how they hire, their like internal restrictions and so on. But we also found that for SMBs, we provide some unique values, like they can hire best professionals that in normal time will want to join them for full-time jobs because they're building their like careers and so on. But for part-time, they're like can participate in it. And the second thing, which is also important for SMBs, is like the price thing. So like they can hire people for part-time for one third of their typical salary. So these two things are crucial, and like it's like we realized it mostly organically, but then we just like adjusted our campaigns, marketing campaigns to it. That makes sense.
It makes great sense. So let's build on this concept of the campaigns. So obviously, every founder is focused on scale and how do you grow your user base, consequently revenue. But also at the same time, you have to make investments in your platform. How do you think about it? You know, do you say I'm going to absolutely spend at least this much on product development, this much on sales and marketing, or no? Is it, you know, like, hey, now I'm going to devote the majority of our budget on getting the word out to make sure that the market knows we exist?
Right. So actually, like, my whole background is in VC and startups. So like my first startup, we raised like a few rounds of investments and it was acquired. And then I joined a VC firm and Inch started as a like a startup backed by VC firm. But like a couple of years ago, when we like developed our MVP and we validated almost all major things, and when we started to raise our next round, we like I went to my friends in other VC firms in the US, and during this trip I realized that the VC market, it looks like it doesn't perform well. It didn't perform well. So like we found ourselves in a situation where we are growing, but it's hard to raise like money. And I came back to my team and we like discussed it, and like we realized that we need to like to start to be profitable in like in a couple of months because our like burn and free cash so like limitations. So and during these 2 months we did a lot of adjustments to our strategy, and the most important one was like we started to use our own service as users. So like at that time we were like, okay, we need to go from one investment round to another one, we need to prove to investors and all these traditional things. And then we realized that no such limitations anymore, we just need to be profitable. So we cut a lot of initiatives that we had at that moment, and we started to look of how we can be profitable. And actually, we just like published a request on our platform. Hey guys, we want to scale. We have this like current metrics. Who can advise us of how can we do this? And a few people responded, and they suggested to us some strategies. We chose two. It was like Facebook, Instagram ads, and SEO. And we hired two part-timers, one from a like European Uber-like company who was a head of performance there, and another one from a bank, same position. And like in 2 months, they achieved some like nice results. So we started to be profitable. We started to earn money. And like with this approach, we realized that like last year, our growth was something like 70x. So like, and since then we do not need investments anymore. We are like profitable, and we found some ways of how we can support this growth. Does that make sense?
Great. It does. So you mentioned that your company got acquired and that you spent time working at a VC firm. How long were you there for?
I worked for 2 years, but like yeah, so like 7 years with my first startup and 2 years at a VC firm.
Great. And so that time when you were at the VC firm, and now all of a sudden you get to look at other companies through the lens as an investor. How did that change your perspective on looking at early stage companies?
It's all about the context, as I like see it now. So the most important, like I recently investigated this market from a strange perspective. A friend of mine, he published a course of how to raise money from VCs, and I just like looked over it, and it looks like people are trying to to make their investment decks better, to they are trying new ways of how to approach investors via, I don't know, email or cold outreach or something like that. But the key point is that they are focusing on the 20% thing, and the what 80% thing is that you need to have a product market fit. You need to have some chemistry. And as a founder, with potential investors and so on, and you need to know your niche, and like the VC market is structured in a way that like VCs are typically smart people, and they can go through it, they can get all the information they need and so on. So like you actually like n nowadays you just need to work on your project, and if you will achieve some results, you definitely will like raise the money if it's not like a situation like it was a couple of years ago. So, but based on my like feelings or understandings, like market is pretty well structured. So the only one thing you just need to do is to develop your business.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Context is everything. Today there are investors who focus on pre-seed, or businesses that focus on seed or Series A and Series B, and depending on where a company is in its life cycle, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it totally is dependent of when the appropriate time is to have those conversations. But in any event, focusing on your business, showing that you have top line or user growth. Extremely valuable. I mean, hats off to you for getting your comp inch to profitability. I think that's a really big deal as well. Especially here, as I look around, money doesn't flow freely like it did a couple years ago. And there's absolutely now a bigger focus on the bottom line. So I think that's great insight.
So let me add one more thing. And actually, like the first startup that I joined, it was in 2011. And like during that time, it was like to raise a pre-seed money, you just need to have a like two founders or like experienced founders and some idea. And products were like, I don't know, a photo editing tool or something. It was pretty straightforward. But then and like checks were much bigger than now. Like I remember this joke that you need to invest at least 1.5 mil just because like a half of it will go to licenses or something like that. And but then like all these SaaS services were developed, AWS and all other things. So like startups don't need to spend a lot to build their infrastructure. And this moment when you can raise your pre-seed is moving forward. So after that it was like you need to have some users or MVP, then some users, then first money. And now it looks like it's moving towards you need to have profitability or something like that to raise the money. And we are actually participating in this in this trend, because One of the biggest costs is to hire developers and professionals to support your growth, so to support your start. And now with things like part-time hiring, you can actually hire people not for equity, but for a relatively small amount of money as part-timers. So like it looks like in the nearest future we probably will not need VC firms for companies which operate as a SaaS or something similar, where you do not need to investigate in hardware or in biotech or something like that. So all major costs are now could be covered with like relatively small amount of money.
I've seen the exact same thing. I mean, the amount of capital it takes now to get to an MVP, I mean, is a fraction of what it was in the past. And it's funny, I mean, every single day I'm reading about a new tool where, you know, a founder can pretty much do a tremendous amount of coding on their own, even if that's not their background. And it, you know, just helps you wonder, I'm like, oh my gosh, what's it going to be like in 5 years? I mean, anyone's going to be able to build a product with a little bit of effort. Obviously, marketing it, getting users on board, making sure their experience is positive is a whole different story. But I couldn't agree with you more. World's definitely changing. And with that change, so obviously artificial intelligence, significant development. You know, I find that almost every conversation I participate in, people are talking about what role does AI play in solutions. I would love your perspective. Is it a core focus of yours right now? Do you see it on the periphery? How are you thinking about it?
So it's for us, it's a complex thing. It's actually, I'm a mathematician, and smart algorithms is what I learned at the university, at my university. So the idea is we definitely see a lot of benefits. Like our developers use it a lot. We like translated our product into 100 something languages with new AI products. So it improves our own like productivity as a team. At the same time, we implemented it in few aspects of our product, and we have found some limitations. So, for example, in our domain, when people are hiring other people or collaborating somehow, the idea is that people prefer to work with other people. And when you're hiring someone, you actually need to build some trust before you will make an offer, right? Especially let's say our own example, when we like the example that I shared with our part-time marketers, we pay them like one third of their typical salary, but we shared with them our marketing budget, which was much, much bigger than their salaries. So we need to have some trust to trust them this money. And this is about all hiring. So you need to trust, to make some trust to hire these people. And on the opposite side, we see a lot of products that help to make AI interviews and so on. And professionals, especially the best ones, they hate the idea that like the companies they send their AI representative to make this interview. And so like it looks like AI thinks they can boost your own productivity as a professional, but like if you want to put it somewhere in like in between two people, it doesn't work at this moment. So at least people are not ready to it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I it's kind of funny. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I think the application is really important, and I think a lot of people have been having fun with this subject. To your point, I was like, someone was saying, we're going to get to a point where, I'll have an AI agent. Somebody I'm interested in will have an AI agent, and those AI agents will date. And if they come back and they tell you there's a fit, they'll let you know, and then you can consider going out with them for dinner. And it's like, okay, hold on a second here.
Yeah, exactly.
The human element's really important. And sure, being efficient is really valuable. But yeah, I mean, you have to build trust. Especially I think it's, if you think about the problem you're solving, people want to stay close to their family, live in a place they're familiar with, but you still need to be able to make connections, and you have to be able to have FaceTime and connect with them to get to know them. So I think that that's really, I think that's a great point. Also, if we can, we can go back to the company you sold. It's not too often we have founders who've had successful exits. If you can give us a little bit of background on that company and what the process was like leading up to the sale, I know our audience would love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. So, the funny story is that before my first startup, I joined another edutech startup as a CTO, and it was a B2C company. And like my project was as a CTO, I managed like our tech team, and we also like launched our product on our first international market in Brazil. And after that, I realized that I will never ever be involved in a B2C startup. So I co-founded a B2B, and it's Sellplay. It's a marketing automation platform for B2C companies like Papa John's. The idea is that like they're good at what they're doing, but like all of them need some sort of like CRM, but for their B2C customers, not B2B, they need like analytics, loyalty programs, and all other things. And it should be multi-channel, so like it should work the same way in their like brick and mortar stores and on their website, mobile apps with their partners and so on. When we moved to the United States in 2014, we started our international growth and expansion. So, and one funny thing that we realized that even if you are working with a company like, I don't know, Korean company, their headquarters, I mean marketing headquarters, typically still is in the United States. So you need to be presented in the United States. And that's how you then you typically start working with their headquarters, and they distribute you your solution with their franchisees or partners or something like that. That's how your B2B expansion looks like. But then it was acquired. It was a tough process, to be honest. It's a nice experience. Now I know why all of these things and terms in SHA and other founders like agreements are important, because like you sign them typically and when you're an early stage startup, but investors apply them when they're on later stages, when it's converts and so on. It was like three rounds of this like sales cycle, but finally it was acquired.
And I'd love to know, were there any terms in the agreement that if you had a chance to change, you would have?
I would say no. It was almost I don't know, 6 years ago. It was in the past. Now I'm moving forward with the experience that I have.
Fair enough. Well, I think that's great. And, obviously being a repeat founder, is extremely valuable for the reason that you point out. It's a great opportunity to incorporate what you've learned along the way and make sure that you're benefiting from that. Yakov, this has been a great podcast. Before we wrap up, we'd love to know. I enjoy asking this. If you had a chance to go back and talk to your younger self, what would you tell yourself?
I would say take more risk.
Interesting that this concept has come up a lot. We've had a lot of people say take more risk. I can imagine why, but please.
You know, it's actually, as I said, I'm a mathematician, and it's a concept. When you, if you will put, I don't know, 100 of people in the same conditions, and they will be able to choose different strategies of how they will do something. The most interesting one is, and most profitable is when you need to. Put as much risk as you can at the beginning, and if you will handle it, you will overperform all your competitors. But if not, it's an option. I mean, mathematical structure. So your downside is limited, but your upside is not limited. So it's like you can think about your life as a startup. So you can do a lot of small experiments, and with each you have a limited downside. I don't know, you can lose everything, but if you do not have a lot of I don't know, money or capital or something, like it's not a big deal. But if you will achieve something, it will be like a huge upside.
I think, you know, looking at that objectively, like you laid it out, makes a ton of sense in the world. And in fact, you know, I've said as much. I usually find myself in conversations with these with people in their early 20s, and they're like, "What job should I get?" And I was like, "Well, have you ever considered starting a business? Because if it doesn't work out, the consequences are a lot different than when you're in your 30s or in your 40s or older." And so I think that's great insight. Yakov, if there's anyone who would like to get a hold of you, whether it's someone who's interested in working on the Inch team, making themselves available for part-time work, investors who'd like to learn more about the company, how can they find you?
Sure. So you can just go to inch.org/Yakov, and you will see a button to contact me. So like feel free to approach me if you have any questions or ideas, or you know, like how we can work together.
Fantastic. Yakov Filipenko, founder of Inch. Yakov, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. It's been a great podcast.
Thank you.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.